It's October 26, 2015. It's Monday night, about 9:40 p.m., and I'm heading home. I'm in Joshua Tree here. And I rarely do this kind of thing, but this is a rescue of an animal. It's a cormorant. What the hell is a cormorant doing in Joshua Tree National Park? Oh, that is a good question. First of all, human development has destroyed most of the coastal wetlands and natural habitat, I think, for these seabirds. It is a seabird. I imagine this poor creature was at the Salton Sea for a while, and either he ate, there's some tilapia and other fish that are there that are poisonous to eat, full of, I don't know if it's aflatoxin or whatever it is, it's some bacteria that, especially when the temperatures are hot, the fauna just becomes full of these things. And then they've had the authorities, Fish and Wildlife or whoever these people are, they've apparently had to destroy, that means incinerate, kill, or dispose of dead pelicans and other birds by the thousands, tens of thousands, that are feasting on this tilapia, who is full of botulism, is the word. I think it's botulism that they've got. And I don't know what botulism is. It's a bacteria, very, very harmful. Well, whatever the case is, and I don't know that cormorants are migratory birds or that they even fly in flocks. I really don't know what the hell this cormorant was doing up there, unless this is some sick prank. Hang on now, the merging here is always brutal. I'm gonna let these four semis go. Ugh. This is the most goddamn dangerous stretch of highway I've ever had to negotiate. It is so full of big rigs. Danger, you know, driving dangerously, or, you know, it's two lanes, and these big rigs are often in both lanes, you know, passing each other, going 60, going 75, going whatever they are, or they're in the passing lane going 60 when everyone else is trying to go 75, and there are just some gnarly, gnarly, gnarly accidents up here, and I've come close to being killed myself, and I can't wait till I'm somewhere else. I don't want to be driving this stretch of highway, you know, to get away from cell towers, to exercise. It's just a very high price I'm paying in terms of gasoline, time, exposure to danger. It's just not good. Anyways, I was, what time was it? 6 o'clock? 6:15. I'm driving into this dirt road that I go hiking on. And there, half mile in, maybe more, sitting in the middle of this road, or close to the middle, is this bird. And I kind of blow by it. I might have hit him if he had been dead center, but he was off to my left a little bit. And I just said to myself, that's fucking crazy, you know? What is an ocean bird doing in the high desert? And he didn't even move, really, to get out of the way. You know, this is not a good thing. And so I kept on going, maybe 100 yards or so. I stopped, saw him sitting in the road, and I backed up. I parked my car, put the flashers, you know, the emergency lights on. Checked on him, and then went back, got some nuts and seeds and water. Tried giving him some of that. He wasn't interested. And put water in a bowl, one of my aluminum bowls, and he just was pecking at it. Was not in his right mind. I figured, you know what, man, if you're not... And then as I was in the car, getting ready to keep on going another half mile to my destination before I park, he followed me. I mean, he was past my car a little bit and stopped. And I kept on, you know, I went on. I parked a half mile down. And he... It's hard, it's painful to see him walk. It's not a waddle. He doesn't have a waddle, like a duck. I mean, he's not made for walking much at all. He's standing up as tall as he can get and kind of flapping his arms. And it's really the motion that you see in documentaries of these ocean birds. And how do they take off in the water? Well, they get up tall, and they flap their wings, and they start to kind of walk along the water until they're airborne. And that's what he was doing. His walking is not meant for terrestrial walking. Not much, at least. He did spook me out a little bit with his long and fairly sharp bill. He hasn't hit me yet. I haven't lit him. But I had on a sweater and my canvas gloves that I use for, the gloves are for carrying my weights, just in case he pecked me. But I didn't want to take a chance on being hurt. So I shower, and I'm readying myself for my hike, and maybe at 6, I don't know what time it is. You know, at 6:15 or something, because I remember I got off on the hike around 6:30. And lo and behold, right 10 feet from my car, past my car, he's sitting in the dirt, I mean in the sand, in the road, looking at me. There's no way this guy can fly. He's not fly worthy. So he had done that painful walk of his, half mile, and then sat near my car, and my gestalt was, this is a wild animal. He knew he was on his last legs, literally. He knew that he was in a dangerous environment, or she, I'm gonna call him a he. You know, there's coyotes and there's ringtail cats, you know, these raccoons and rats. There's quite a number of creatures around, you know, carnivores that would take him out in a second. And he's a wounded animal. I don't know how. I don't know if he's sick from the aluminum poisoning or from something he ate down below. I do know that I've heard that, let's say, Canadian geese, for example, or some birds, they won't leave their mate unless their mate is dead. And so I wondered, where was his mate? His brothers and sisters had abandoned him, and that was not a good sign. Left him for dead. So, as a wild animal, he didn't trust me. He would peck at me, kind of, almost involuntarily. You know, that's just what you do as a bird. You don't want me touched, you don't trust large animals, and so you're going to peck. But he came to me because I think his survival sense, because I was talking to him, you know, it's not like, I don't know what it means to a bird to be spoken to by a human, but on my end, it was reassuring tone of voice, just calm talking. And I think what he saw in me was the possibility of a creature that would keep the more dangerous ones away. I don't know how often it is that wild animals seek out humans to heal them or protect them. Because more often than not, we are the aggressors, we are the betrayers, we are the carnivores. We eat all creatures. I'm not proud of it, just what it is. So it was very clear to me that he was seeking shelter or safety by being near me in this strange environment. You know, me being the self-involved person that I am, yeah, I'm up there for a hike. Not everyone's going to make it. And let nature take its course, you know. I don't believe in, for the most part, I don't believe in heroic measures to save life. Not generally. You know, some people just have to, you know, they're just, death is a part of life. It's not something to orient your whole world toward avoiding. You know, it's just unavoidable at some point. And so I figured, you know what, I can't really save him. He's gonna crap all over my car. You know, what am I gonna do? Stick him inside my car as I go hiking for 2.5 hours? You know, is that gonna work? Crapping on my upholstery, and you know, this, he did leave some green poop on the sand near the car. So I left him. And, you know, so I was like, I don't know, you know, chances were greater than zero that he would be consumed. He would meet his untimely end while I was hiking. And I pictured coming back to seeing feathers strewn about my car, signs of a fight for life. But I didn't. I came back. There's nothing there except for a poop in a spot that I knew he hadn't been in before I had left. And I went about my business, and I did locate him behind a bush. And he saw me, and he came forward 20 feet to be near me. He came within 6 feet of me, or 8 feet of me, or something. And that's when I realized, you know, after him, you know, and I had my headlamp looking at him. You know, it wasn't like, it was in the dark, and not like he could see me. He knew I was there. But he still came for me. And he sat down 6 feet away from me. And that's when I kind of realized that, you know, I'm being called upon to do something. He wants my help. It was the course of the hike, I was thinking a couple of things. One is that, you know, this is a test. You know, I mean, I could just see superstitious people, or maybe just spiritually sensitive people. You know, the moral, they're a fine moral character. And what is, you know, I was wondering whether this little guy was a test. You know, whether I'm willing to help another creature. Step out of my comfort zone and do something for someone or something. And that's what I've done. So I had the trunk open. I have a laundry basket, a white plastic laundry basket that I put all of my hiking paraphernalia into. My extra shirts, all my hiking pants and sweater and jacket and maybe sandals or shoes and socks and a hat. My, you know, knife and or gun, whatever I might have, it's in there. And I emptied it out in the trunk, and I brought the basket near him, and I had my towel that I use for showering, and I was going to have him sit on it and just sit in it, but you know what, he was trying to peck at me, and it was just, it was not going to be easy. And so what I did is I took the towel, which was just big enough to cover him with a couple few inches to spare, and I covered him, and that kind of brought his neck down to the sand and mellowed him a little bit. And I carried him off to and laid him in the basket with the towel over him. And in fact, and where he is right now is in my basket with this pink towel over him. And I think he's just sleeping there, resting. And I think my plan tomorrow is I will ask my mother, ask mom to call the Humane Society or Animal Rescue or whatever agency that hopefully will try to take care of this guy. Put him in connection, you know, connect him with some group that might be able to take care of an injured seabird. Not that I want to do it, but I'm going to try to take him to someone who can help him. I don't remember the last time I rescued an animal. but very unusual to see an injured bird out in the middle of nowhere, an ocean bird. Pretty big guy. I mean, I don't know. Actually, they're not that, for how as bulky as they are, birds are not that heavy. They've got those bones that are, I guess, hollow or something, and the feathers, have these hollow joints or whatever they are. The main piece of the feather is kind of this hollow tube. There's a lot of air in them. Make them more flight worthy. And I guess the question is whether I let him have my basket or if I'm just going to put him outside for the night. I'll take him away from the coyotes. I promise him he will not die from coyotes tonight. I took a picture of him with a flash after he had come to my car. And I may take a picture of him in my basket. That's it. Nothing more to share about it right now. I didn't want to have to help anybody tonight, but stuff presents itself to you, and just you go with it. It's kind of like people who either were lost or stuck on the Second Falls in Manoa Valley. I would sometimes go help, either help bring people out, or I would always have, I think, 5 or 6 flashlights in my fanny pack. I was always ready to give a group of people extra flashlights and have them walk out with me, just getting caught up there in the dark. But I was not the one to go up. I never went up to the Second Falls. Just very steep, almost vertical, climbing routes 80 feet up. Maybe it was 90 feet. I don't know what it was. And it was just slippery, and if it rains, it's a death sentence. And there were some people that even got too close to the edge and just slipped off and fell 90 feet, or whatever it was, 80, and died, of course. But, I'm not that kind of heroism. Just small stuff. That's it. Over and out.